All right, make sure you're in fellowship, and we'll get this contract signed. Verse 17, titled it, The Covenant Ratified. Looking at the Hebrew here, and it came about when the sun had set that it was very dark. So another transition in this vision, and you have the wow consecutive, calendar perfect, third masculine singular, Hayah, H-A-Y-A-H. Translated came about, are now for some with a definite article common, both singular absolute, Shemesh, S-H-E-M-E-S-H. Had set is our cow perfect third feminine singular verb, bow, to come, go, here's set, it's gone, B-O. That it was very dark. You have the wow conjunction with the common feminine singular absolute noun, alata, alata, A-L-A-T-A-H, used four times. Very dark is the translation. Then you have the cow perfect third masculine singular verb hayah repeated, and very dark it became, literally. And behold, there appeared a smoking oven, a flaming torch, which passed between these pieces. Wow conjunction, followed with the interjectory particle hinna, H-I-N-N-E-H, and behold, a smoking oven. You have an oven of smoke, literally. You have the common both singular construct noun, tanur, T-A-N-N-U-R, used 15 times in the construct, an oven of. Here, smoke is a common masculine singular noun, absolute, ashan, A-S-H-A-N, used 18 times. And a torch of fire, a wow conjunction, common masculine singular construct noun, a word for torch is lapid, L-A-P-P-I-Y-D, used 14 times, again in construct, torch of, this one of fire, translated flaming torch, a common both singular absolute noun, esh, fire, E-S-H, which passed between these pieces. You have the relative pronoun, asher, A-S-H-E-R, which passed through is a cow, perfect third masculine singular verb, abar, var, A-B-A-R, between, preposition by-in, B-A-Y-I-N, then you have the definite article, common masculine, plural, absolute noun, gezer, G-E-C-E-R, between the divided parts, literally, these divided parts. You have the definite article, adjective, both plural, a demonstrative adjective here as it's functioning, ella, E-L-L-E-H. All right, rereading verse 17. And it came about when the sun had set that it was very dark, and behold, an oven of smoke and a torch of fire which passed between these divided pieces. All right, analysis, verse 17. One, the vision now returns to the ceremonial setting. God is performing a ceremonial rite found to be customary in the book of Jeremiah of making a contract or pact between parties. The ceremony itself began before the addendum of the prophecy. That is construed to be the main body or draft of the real estate contract. In verses 9 through 11. Then we had the prophetic addendum, and now we have the actual signing, if you will, the ratifying. Two, with the addendum to the main contract in place, the contract can now be signed. No contract is good unless the appropriate party's signature, John Hancock, if you will, is on the piece of paper. Three, that the real estate transaction here requires no actual purchase, another unique feature of this real estate transaction, but it is presented as a gift that was made clear in verse 7, as Yahweh says, to give you this land to possess it. You don't have to buy it. You don't have to do anything, Abraham. I'm going to give it to you. So that the real estate transaction requires no actual purchase, but is presented as a gift. Only one signature is required, and that by the owner. So, again, the contract is unilateral. Only one party needs to sign it. That's the owner, who is giving away, if you will, the rights of title to the property. So, four, this highlights that the real estate clause is unconditional. The Abrahamic covenant begins as a conditional covenant. The conditions were presented to Abraham at the initial revelation of the covenant back in chapter 13. And that was that he moved out of Ur, relocate to Canaan, and separate from his negative family. It took him a little while to get there. 4 or 5 years, in fact. But he did. Once that occurred, then the covenant itself changes from conditional to unconditional. The terms have been met. And there is nothing else that Abraham has to do in order for the promises to be fulfilled on his behalf. So the real estate clause of the covenant, that portion of the covenant, is unconditional. Five, the ratification here, the signing of it, validation, the seal, or whatever however you want to legally look at it. The ratification includes both literal and spiritual significance, following the pattern of the ceremony and contractual addendum, keeping everything constant in regards to the contract itself, that it is part of the ceremonial rite. Obviously, there is symbolism embedded in it, as it was in the previous verses. So it has both a literal and spiritual or legal significance attached to it also. Six, the literal and present significance presents the contract as signed immediately before Abraham. Now, one of the aspects of looking at these verses is recognizing that God is utilizing physical, tangible things, something one can see otherwise, as evidence of the doctrine that he is proclaiming to Abraham in regards to the covenant. It began with the promise of having descendants from his own loins, taking them out, showing the stars in the sky. Abraham, who obviously embraces Yahweh as the sovereign or the omnipotent Yahweh, Adonai Yahweh, the master creator of the universe, is able to look, contemplate, recognize, yeah, God created all this. Sexual death in the family is no big obstacle for him to overcome. And as it says, he believed, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. Then Abraham comes in, and he utilizes the same type of situation, requests the same type of situation now to confirm the real estate portion of the clause. So you have this layer of this real estate contract that meets these needs. There is a tangible physical aspect in regards to it for Abraham personally, that is Yahweh presenting this before him in this vision. It's real to Abraham. It's just as real as us sitting here today. See, and so they obviously has confirmation of Abraham. Then for his descendants, you had fulfillment of prophecy. See, as an overt confirmation. So you have that aspect, those aspects that are tied into all this. And once again, obviously, we have a literal and present significance in regard to what's going on, and that is the ceremonial rite now being concluded by Yahweh, and something in the form of theophany appears before him. See, in regards to the elements, the instruments used in the signing ceremony, the smoking oven and flaming torch. So the literal present significance, point six again, presents the contract is signed immediately before Abraham. That point in time in history, this is Abraham's validation. Seven, the spiritual, again, looks to the legal significance of the signing and points to a future reality. So, looking at it now, eight, the time of day progresses to after the sunset, and it was very dark. This all occurs within a 1 24-hour period. This whole scenario of chapter 15. Nine, now the noun very dark, alata, emphasizes the deep darkness of night. That there is no more hue or form of light, if you will, from the sunset, etc., that was occurring earlier. A deep darkness tonight, compares Ezekiel 12, verses 6, 7, and 12, words used four times, our verse in these three verses. Oh, the baggage on your shoulder and their sight and carried out in the dark, in the dark of night. You shall cover your face so you cannot see the land, for I set you as a sign to the house of Israel. Verse 7, and I did so as I have been commanded. This is Ezekiel. By day I brought out my baggage like the baggage of an exile. Then in the evening I dug through the wall with my hands. That would be sunset, dusk. And then later, I went out in the dark, so the very dark of night. So that shows you the difference there. And carried the bags on my shoulder in their sight. Then verse 12, and the prince who is among them will load his bags on his shoulder in the dark and go out. So those verses recognize that you're in the depth of the darkness that you would find at nighttime without any natural light otherwise provided. So the noun very dark, alata in the Hebrew, emphasizes the deep darkness of night. 10, this in contrast to the previous great darkness, as is translated in verse 12 in the prophecy, that emphasized the volume or vastness of the absence of light. I alluded to this already when we went through that verse. So there you have a vast amount of darkness that looks at the darkness of the evil of the world, that indeed is vast. Now we look at, if you will, the depth of darkness, very dark. 11, with this setting, Now, a theophany occurs. Theophany, where God manifests himself in some physical form or fashion. So with this setting, a theophany occurs, and behold, an oven of smoke and a torch of fire which passed between these divided pieces. The divided pieces, again, is the three large animals split in two, laid in mirror fashion, one facing the other, and then the two birds whole, then also laid in fashion, five animals, four rows of animals. So 12, something representing deity then passes between the rows of the divided animal carcasses, showing that this covenant, again, is unilateral, it's one-sided. 13, if it was bilateral, we would have something representing Abram as well passing through the animals. He would be involved because the passing through is the signator. That's the person making the covenant. So, again, it's unilateral, one-sided, unconditional. 14, now, the verb passed literally means to, quote, pass through or by, end quote, and signifies that the theophany passed between all, it should be four pairs of animals. There's five animals, that's what I was thinking when I did it. I've corrected it already on my computer. But it, looking at it in their pairs, there would be four. Probably don't need my artwork to picture this, but that's your, what we're going to do here. The two, three animals are split in half. They're supposed to be equal. We say they're split down the middle. And then you have the two birds. One bird's laid here, one bird's laid there. The theophany passes down between them. That is the act of making the agreement, the final act. Doesn't look like anything dirty, so I'm safe. All right. You never know. My artwork. So the verb passed literally means to pass through or by, and signifies that the theophany passed between all four pairs of animals. 15, this shows an act of completeness. The signing is, if you will, the ratifying is complete in regard to the contract. 16, the cow perfect form of the verb passed validates that God considers the covenant a done deal. Action in the past, that's your cow verb, cow form. 17, this provides for Abram now unquestionable validation by God that he is destined to inherit the land. 18, it is the symbolic significance of the theophany, again, that points to the legal validation, providing God with the right to guarantee this title for future occupation of the land. Again, the symbolism goes deeper beyond just a ceremonial rite to spiritual significance, legal significance. 19, now the setting of very dark symbolizes the darkness equivalent to night that came over the land during Christ's work on the cross. One of the supernatural features that occurred in the 3 hours that Jesus Christ was on the cross. God hid the sun and turned the land dark to give Jesus, if you will, ultimate privacy in this despicable, horrendous thing he was going to go through of becoming a body of sin on behalf of mankind. So, in addition to that significance that we know from the New Testament, we can now add the significance of the symbolism that's attached to the Abrahamic covenant in relationship to that period of time. Matthew 27:45. Now, from the sixth hour, that would be 12 noon, darkness fell upon the land until the ninth hour. Mark 15:33. These are all synoptic parallels to prove beyond a doubt. When the sixth hour came, darkness fell over the whole land until the ninth hour, until 3 p.m. And then also Luke 23:44. And it was about the sixth hour, and darkness fell over the whole land till the ninth hour. So we're zeroed in now on specifically the final 3 hour of the 6 hour period that Christ is on the cross. The period of time of which he undergoes spiritual death, and his work is efficacious. That means it's effective in regards to sin bearing and providing our salvation. First 3 hours, all the pain that he went through at that time was just put upon him by man. This 3 hours, in addition to that, God now exacts his wrath on him. So the symbolism now of an oven, tanur in the Hebrew, looks to something being prepared and offering to God. What's an oven for? To bake something, to cook something. So it looks at an act of preparation. Confer Leviticus 2:4. Now we bring an offering of a grain offering baked in an oven. The offering was prepared before it was brought. It's prepared in an oven. It should be unleavened cakes, etc. Similar. Likewise, every grain offering that is baked in an oven. Baked in the oven. 21. Now, the smoke, ashan, that symbolizes God's wrath or anger. Example, Deuteronomy 29:19. It shall be when he hears the words of this curse that he will boast, saying, I have peace, though I walk in the stubbornness of my heart, in order to destroy the watered with the dry, with the smoke. Reflecting wrath. Smoke shows something dried up. 2 Samuel 22:9. Smoke went up out of his nostrils in regards to God, and fire from his mouth devoured. Coals were kindled by it. So all that relates to anger, judgment, wrath. Psalm 18:8. God's wrath is his anger. Technically, that's his righteousness responding to unrighteousness. See. Psalm 18:8. Again, smoke went up out of his nostrils, fire from his mouth devoured, coals were kindled by it. 22, now the torch, lapid, represents an instrument used to provide spiritual light. An instrument used to provide spiritual light. Compare Isaiah 62, 1. Most of us recognize what these things are. Here it represents spiritual light. Isaiah 62, 1. For Zion's sake I will not keep silent. For Jerusalem's sake I will not keep quiet. Till her righteousness goes forth like brightness, and her salvation like a torch that is burning. Spiritual light of darkness, gospel, etc. 23, now the fire, esh, in the Hebrew, is fuel for the torch, and it's symbolic of judgment. So smoke, God's wrath, torch, the instrument used for spiritual light, the fuel, comes in the form of judgment. Genesis 19:26. That's not right. 19:24. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. That's pretty obvious. That's judgment on the homosexual vice of those two major cities. Exodus 9, 23 and 24. Moses stretched out his staff here under the plagues placed upon Egypt in the very context we saw near prophecy of God judging the ones who oppressed Israel. Stretch out your hand, verse 22, toward the sky, that hail may fall on all the land of Egypt, on man and on beast, and on every plant of the field throughout the land of Egypt. And Moses stretched out his staff toward the sky, and the Lord sent thunder and hail, and fire ran down to the earth. Fire was included in that regard. The Lord rained hail on the land of Egypt. Verse 24, so there was hail and fire flashing continually in the midst of the hail. Very severe, such as not been in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. That all as aspects of judgment against them. 32:20. Fire is usually pretty easy one to identify symbolically. 32:20. And he took the calf which they had made and burned it with fire and ground it to powder and scattered it over the surface of the water and made the sons of Israel drink it. So fire is fuel for the torch. It's symbolic of judgment. Continuing point 23. That illuminates in the midst of darkness. You put them together. It illuminates. You got a light you can use when you're out in dark so you don't stub your toe or stumble and fall. Exodus 13:21. The Lord was going before them in a pillar of cloud by day to lead them on the way, and a pillar of fire by night to give them light. It reflects like a torch type of situation, that they may travel by day and by night. God in theophany there with the Exodus. Nehemiah 9, 12 and 19. And with a pillar of cloud you did lead them by day, with a pillar of fire by night, to light for them the way in which they were to go. You in your great compassion, verse 19, did not forsake them in the wilderness. The pillar of cloud did not lead them by day to guide them on their way, nor the pillar of fire by night to light for them the way in which they were to go. All that had spiritual significance attached to it as well as literal. Psalm 78:14. Led them with a cloud by day, all the night with a light of fire. With a light of fire, see. Putting the scenario together. So that is the symbolism attached to the oven, smoke, torch, and fire. 24. So God is symbolically personified here as A, preparing an offering for his wrath. B, providing light and darkness through judgment. Just beautiful. Doctrine is just absolutely beautiful. When it's put together and it's seen in its proper light, still get the rosy glows off these verses. They're pretty cool. 25, God passing now between the divided animals symbolizes that it is through the person of Christ that the execution of this wrath and judgment will be accomplished. 26, it is an action once for all time. It is completed. Christ, contrary to the crucifixes that Catholics like to wear, is not still bearing sins on the cross. No, that 3 hours time, as impossible as it may seem to men, with God nothing is impossible. He paid the penalty and the price once for all time for all men. Romans 6:10. For the death that he died to sin once for all. But the life that he lives to God. So that's continuous. 1 Peter 3:18. For Christ also died for sins once for all, the just for the unjust, in order that he might bring us to God, having been put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit. Twenty-seven, as with the beginning of the ceremony, the symbolic hypostasis of Christ's person presented in his two parts indicates that the hypostasis is yet to be realized. The ceremony is an anticipation of the reality. See, at this point in time in history, the time of Abraham, 1800 approximately B.C., this reality had not yet come to fruition. So everything symbolically points to that reality in the future. The hypostasis, taken from the Greek word hypostasis, which means to stand under, looks at the condescending of God the Son in his deity into this mysterious yet real union with the humanity of the person of Jesus Christ. He became one person in this state. He is recognized in that regards that his deity and his humanity didn't swap attributes. He was true humanity just as he is true deity. Humanity wasn't omnipresent. No, it was tangible there in one spot at any given time. But yet his deity remained omnipresent. So the fact that we don't see in the symbolism these animals being burnt as they would be in a normal offering in the Mosaic Law, blood spread on the horns, that points to the fact that no, this hasn't happened yet. It's an anticipation of this. Perfect anticipation, if you will. So as with the beginning of the ceremony, point 27 again, the symbolic hypostasis of Christ's person presented in his two parts indicates that the hypostasis is yet to be realized. Again, his deity is humanity. His roles as king and priest represented in the divided carcasses of the animals. The whole birds looks at his person as one. 28, now in the context of judgment, so now we have the same principle. We'll take it within the context of the judgment that the theophany represents. Now, in the context of judgment, it further symbolizes that Christ's deity will reject his humanity during the 3 hours on the cross. That's why you have parents. That during those 3 hours, Christ died spiritually. And as we say, his deity rejected his humanity. His deity can't become sin. It's impossible. See? So a separation occurred. The most critical time, and probably not to second guess Jesus by any stretch of the imagination, but probably the most pressure that he felt was breaking union with the Father. And people said they loved Jesus and they loved God. When it comes to Christ, we just have a modicum of an appreciation of what it means to have union with God. This man, in his complete form, beyond imagination, essentially almost, the historical person Jesus. Matthew 27:46. Everybody's worried about making money, getting a profession, the details of life, Funsville, and everything. All Jesus is concerned about is staying in fellowship, doing God's will. That's commitment. That's focus. People think they have a strong will. 27:46. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani?" That is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Those are words to express the fact God hadn't forsaken him. But he was not there, if you will. He had separated. Fellowship had been broken. And he left him in his humanity, essentially alone on that cross for those 3 hours. There ain't enough crowns to put on his head. Mark 15:34. Parallel, probably. Ninth hour. My God, why have you forsaken me? So 29, Christ's anticipated work on the cross is the legal foundation by which God now ratifies the covenant with Abram. That's his legal justification. The legal right to do what he does with Abram and his descendants. 30, the signing of the contract by God is a statement of certainty that the reality making all this legal will occur. 31, God approaches the covenant legally as a, quote, done deal, end quote, with Abraham, to be evidenced at the first advent. When the Bible makes a promise, God makes a promise, it's a done deal. See? You either plug in phase two, positive volition, you produce divine good production, you make the maturity judgment, you hold the end, and you get the crown, or you don't. It's a done deal. That's the way God's plan is. Either you align with it, or you maladjust to it. Either way, it's a done deal on either side of the coin, according to the dictates and everything that the Bible presents, proposes in regards to these things. God is immutable. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's not going to change on any of this stuff. Nobody's special. Nobody gets a free pass. Either you line up with the situation, you line up with your NPR, and you're doing it right, or else you trash your phase two. You can face your shame at the bema seat. See, that's the way it is. It's a done deal. Every aspect of it. If other people don't tell you these things, I will, because I'll love you. I mean, really love you. Divine love. So God approaches a covenant legally here as a done deal to be evidenced at the first advent. 32, Christ's work on the cross evidences the spiritual reality that light, the law of spiritual truth, overcomes darkness, the law of Satan, human viewpoint, and death, as it's so stated in John 1:5. And then all we have left in regards to this contract in the final verses is the reading of the abstract. We'll save that for Tuesday. An abstract is all important in regards to real estate contract. If you're not informed in that regards, without an abstract, someone may hold title, but someone else can come in and challenge their possession of the land. An abstract's always included. If you ever bought a house, you know it. In regards to being handed a deed or title to property. And that is so that there's a record for all previous owners as it comes down the line. And indeed, the previous owner in the sale itself is bona fide and there's no hanky-panky going on otherwise. And that's one of the things that turned me on to all this stuff in regards to these verses is that I got to those verses. I said, man, this is an abstract. And sure enough, it's a real estate contract. We'll pick that up Tuesday. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to lighten us to see things in Jesus' name. Amen.